Welcome back to another episode of Student Body Right, the complete college football podcast. My name is Nick Valinchek. I am your host. You can find me on all the daily fantasy sites as Nick from CWE, and I'm excited to be here to recap week one of the college football season. Less excited because I just recorded this entire podcast, or should I say I didn't record this entire podcast. So now I have a refresh, and I have to run through this thing all over again. It's not what I desire to do at late at night on the East Coast when I have plenty of other things I need to do, but it's the reality that I've been dealt with. So, yeah, uneven week one, saw some good things. I really do think we saw some teams that we expected to do better really struggle. Thursday night was really just about the top-tier running backs just destroying. Travis Etienne, Jayshon Corbin. Maybe it's premature to put him in that category, and yes, the opponent was absolute crap, but we know this A&M team is going to be willing to run the ball. They gave him a pretty heavy workload for a situation where we didn't think we were going to see that, and he performed well. Zach Moss had a big game. Killens and McCray showed that it could be done. Michael Warren did okay. Not overly impressed at the end of the night with his performance, but it is what it is. Eno Benjamin cracked 100 yards, and he as well was somewhat disappointing. Like, there's no way you can sugarcoat it. I think everybody in the industry, myself included, was just looking at it from the perspective of Eno Benjamin. We know the types of, you know, volume that he normally got, and he was playing Kent State, which just set up to be an absolutely monster situation, and it just wasn't. Less than 5 yards a carry, and it's not something I'm concerned about, right? The carries were still there. They have no choice. They have to reduce his workload. Like, you're not going to see many guys in college football hit this, you know, 30 carry a game for super, super long. Maybe Zach Moss does. He had 29. But the rest of the big hitters, just they had 12, 14, 15 carries. Michael Warren had 26 and another very uneven performance. Under 4 yards a carry. Looked really bad. The offensive line most of the time didn't look like it could block for him. That's concerning. Especially this week. Yes, the Ohio State defense was super bad against running backs last year, but it's not so super bad that I think I'm looking at Warren as a prime option. So definitely a little bit uneven there. Not a lot really to report. The biggest thing was just the fact that Chip Kelly opted to not play Josh Kelly. He was warming up with the first unit. He had a brace on his leg. Okay, he was dealing with some issues in the offseason. We can respect that. We can get that. It makes sense that a coach would or that someone would have a brace on their ankle because, you know, they had some issues. It would make sense that the coach would even limit his reps. I mean, these are things that sometimes you don't necessarily consider. But if you were listening to the podcast, I wasn't high on him. I didn't see this being a situation. I thought Cincinnati's defense was good enough that I respected it to the point where I really didn't want to get too involved with Josh Kelly. I ended up 1% under the field. So I guess if anything, that's a moral victory. Unfortunately, he ended up on almost all of my best lineups because that's just how optimization goes. You know, Theo Howard was questionable, and I don't think he played, and if he did, it was much. So Demetric Felton ended up going from backing up Theo Howard to backing up Josh Kelly to starting and being their offense. Looked good for what UCLA was. Quarterback doesn't look great, doesn't look like a great decision maker. I think the team's still going to struggle. This team could struggle until they find their quarterback. That's probably what it's going to come down to. I mean, a lot of guys struggled. Brandon Wimbush didn't look great. He didn't get a huge body of work to play with, but he didn't look spectacular. Trevor Lawrence looked horrid. poor decisions consistently, forced throws. The game wasn't as out of hand as I thought it was going to be by halftime. ETN looked great, but Trevor Lawrence just looked like a guy, you know? I think that all of these are outliers. I really do. I think we'll see most of these players bounce back, and a guy like Brandon Ayuk, who had a great game, maybe go on to have even bigger games. I mean, he was dynamic at the end of the year last year. He was a guy I was focusing on most out of this Arizona State offense, and it won me some money because he wasn't super owned. I really would have loved the ability to be able to get that on like a 12-game slate where he was probably priced out of consideration. But on a 5-game slate, it was a little bit different. Friday brought us Jonathan Taylor doing Jonathan Taylor things, except now apparently he has the ability to run the football, to catch the football, which is something we really hadn't seen out of his skill set before. I don't think this is going to be his biggest game of the year. I think we will see some of those 24 carry, 250-yard, 2 touchdowns. So maybe we were not going to get as much of a fantasy total because of the fact that he had 4 touchdowns. But I think we'll see some huge numbers still out of Taylor. Michigan State looked like poop. I'm not really going to talk about that. That was really just an ugly game to watch against a Tulsa team that's been a well-known punching bag for quite some time now. Rutgers, absolute domination over UMass, and UMass is one of the worst defenses in the country, so it's not a huge thing to write home about. It's still worth mentioning, don't get me wrong, but yeah, Isaiah Pacheco, 4 touchdowns, Anthony McFarland, a big game, McLean Carter, starting quarterback, 340 for 2 touchdowns, one of them to Bo Melton, who went over 120 yards. That's a connection I think I will look at moving forward. I don't know about this weekend, that's Iowa coming up. And that's going to be a little bit tougher. Last 4 games of the night, fire. I mean, just absolute fire. First two were just really close games, Wake Forest prevailing over Utah State. And what I would – it's funny because I think Utah State were like 3-point dogs, which is essentially neutral. There's essentially a break even on a neutral field. That's how it ended. I was a little more expectant to see Utah State, who I felt probably had a little more experience at the right positions, most notably the quarterback position. And it was close. It really was. There were times I didn't love watching Jamie Newman work. A lot of both he and Cade Carney were very slow developing, awkward type plays. It just didn't look normal to me. They won, you know. He had a big game. Newman had a big game. Sage Surratt, his name we're going to hear about a lot this year. Jalen Warren outshined Gerald Bright. Big time. I mean, big time. We'll see how he performs down the stretch. And then we had Nevada just barely edging Purdue out. Carson Strong in his first start, I believe. Now, he had a good game. Nothing that pops out, but it was a good game. Purdue, Elijah Sindelar, 423 yards, 4 scores, one of which went to Rondale Moore, who had 11 receptions and 124 yards. That's a big stat line, but again, we're going to see bigger. And I think this weekend could be bigger. I'm looking at this. I'm sorry, that's – I forget who they play this weekend. That's the Nebraska-Colorado game and Laviska Shenault, who we'll talk about in a second. But, yeah, I think we'll see bigger out of Moore, but that was still a good game. Colorado State drops 31, loses by 21 points still to Colorado. Colin Hill, 4,700. Alex Fontenot, 4,800. Warren Jackson, 4,900. Those are the top 3 scorers in this game. I mean, you get those guys in your lineup, and you were able to put anyone else you wanted to around them. You know, you get Jonathan Taylor in. You get Chuba Hubbard in. You get Hodgins in, and those are the guys, and that's how you put together the winning lineup. Chuba Hubbard, absolutely insanity. 221 and 3 scores. Spencer Sanders looks good. Isaiah Hodgins, 9 for 170 and 2 TDs on the losing side of the game for Oregon State. So enough that I saw that I liked. you know, Oklahoma State basically looked good 100% of the time, and Oregon State sucks on defense. Like, we're not going to try to sugarcoat it. We're not this. They're not playing Alabama. They're not playing, you know, stout defenses here. This is one of the best matchups you're going to find. But they executed. They did what they were supposed to do every step of the way. Oregon State probably like a 50-50 for the fact that Jake Luton is 6'7". The amount of batted passes he has at the line of scrimmage is baffling. And I do get it because, you know, his motion has to be throwing downward when he's trying to dump off or even make mid-range passes. But wow, like, you would think that his vision should be superior to just about everyone else on the field. Half the time he looked great. Like, at the first series, I was like, shit, this is about to be a game. Like, we were really going to see Oregon State hang 45 points, and they came close. 36 isn't a laughing matter. 13 were in quote-unquote junk time at the end of the game, but still, it was a team that battled. They tried to win. I got nothing but respect for that. That was a good game. You know, I liked what I saw. So those last four games closed out Friday, and I was really excited because I'm thinking to myself, well, hell, we're about to see even better on Saturday. And in my opinion, I just don't think it materialized like that. I think we saw far stronger games during the Thursday-Friday slate and a lot of disappointment on Saturday. So the first thing we saw on Saturday was Justin Fields, and he was good. The mark of the Ohio State quarterback is, at this point, heavily compared to those who came before him. And even though Fields has a lot of upside running the football, I do think there was some concern on my part in regards to just the whole game. If you didn't watch it, let me summarize it for you. In the first quarter, Ohio State looked like they were on their way to winning a national championship. Their receivers were breaking wide open. Benjamin Victor and Chris Olave both caught pretty decent-sized touchdowns with very little defense around them. And, you know, it's Florida Atlantic, so we're talking about a couple of divisions out of the radar here, but still a team that has been good, right? Justin Fields breaks a huge 50-yard run. I mean, this kid just looks like he's seen the field and he knows where everything's going. And honestly, like, for the next three quarters, the Florida Atlantic defense just appears to completely understand what Ohio State is trying to do. And they proceed to score 0 points, a single touchdown, and 10 points. And it wasn't until like 3 minutes left in the game that Justin Fields and the offense were pulled off. Look, it's one game. He's playing in a new system. He's come up north. I'm not looking at this as anything but an outlier. If we see something similar happen against Cincinnati this weekend, maybe I'll have some concern. In the meantime, at $8,900 on DraftKings, in what I expect to be somewhat more of a competitive game, with the likelihood that Cincinnati is still down their top defensive weapon, I believe. And Cincinnati didn't look like world beaters against the UCLA team that I'm still convinced is not a good football team. $8,900 for Justin Fields. That feels fair until after this week is over. And now, mind you, I'm a Northeast Ohio guy who hates the Buckeyes. This is strictly based off of the skill set he has, the fact that KJ Hill just did not appear to be trying, dropped what should have been a touchdown pass at the 5-yard line and, you know, wrecked my cash game day, to be sure. But that's my fault. You should never play Ohio State guys in cash games. It was just everything was just flowing together and looked so pretty. And yeah, that's a topic for another day. I'm sure we'll get to it. I didn't love what I saw out of Ohio State. I'm willing to give them a pass. But if it keeps up like this, they're going to find themselves in the position that they found themselves in the past 2 years, where someone's going to catch them sleeping. And even though they dominate the rest of their games, it's going to keep them out of the playoffs, because you won't be able to look past it, because a lot of the rest of the body of work was so inconsistent. Speaking of inconsistent, potentially the worst first quarter I've ever seen a Nick Saban coached team play. Alabama just looked crap, like crap, against Duke. It appeared as if Duke was going to actually score first. And then that was the end of that. They stopped messing around, and Tua went on to have himself a game, 336 for four scores, one to Judy, who had 10 receptions and 137 yards. Chaos in the backfield as everybody and their mother played, except for, I believe, Keelan Robinson, who had very little input, even though he was announced on Friday as a starter, only to have us find out on Saturday that it was actually going to be Jerome Ford. Georgia plays against this Vanderbilt team. You know, it's one of those things where we've had hashtag never Julio. We might want to just start the hashtag never DeAndre Swift. Just when we think it's going to be his turn and we're finally going to see, like, studly running back use, you have to sit back and just recognize and realize that that's just not how Georgia's built. They're going to have Brian Heron involved. They're going to have Cook involved. And Swift had almost 10 yards of carry, 147 yards on 16. It's just, we want to see more out of him. We thought with Elijah Holyfield out of the equation, we would get that. We didn't. And this is a pretty cupcake opponent. Maybe they do the smart thing and they just kind of save him for when they really need to use him, and he'll have fresher legs than a lot of the country. But it's not like ETN is taking the ball like 25 times a game. You know, he's touching the ball 12 to 18 times. He's just hyper efficient when he's producing. So, yeah, I do think that to some extent, you know, there's some disappointment there. Bounce back spot for Vanderbilt this week. I actually think it is. I think it's Vanderbilt and Purdue. It's Vanderbilt and Purdue and Nebraska and Colorado. Like, that's probably going to be like 75% of my cash games and probably 80% of my tournaments. LSU, the now passing LSU Tigers with Joe Burrow under center, 278 for five touchdowns, whomped Georgia Southern. So it was good to see an SEC team actually, you know, perform like an SEC team and not lose like Tennessee did. I think that this is one of those situations where I'm like, man, if Joe Burrow played for LSU when they had Fournette, they had Beckham and Landry. I mean, I know all those guys didn't play at the same time. But, man, I think so often we've sat here and we've talked about, you know, how bad the quarterback play had been at LSU. And this kid looks like he's good. That's all I'm going to say. Texas dominates Louisiana Tech. No surprises there, though it is worth mentioning Jamar Smith, man. That's a kid you got to remember for fantasy. Even in the loss, 331, two touchdowns. Doesn't do much with his legs, but he's probably going to be priced way less than he should be most of the time because he's going to be a huge underdog when he is on fantasy slates. Keontae Ingram looks like he's going to have the backfield to himself. Jordan Whittington, injured, not going to play this week. In a tough test against LSU, that's going to be a good one, and that is going to be my game stack of the week. Because, yeah, Texas defense bad, Texas offense good. I'm just telling you, remember, you heard it here first. You got three players. I don't know if there's going to be a wide receiver one this year like there was, I guess you can say, with little Jordan Humphrey last year. I think you'll see pretty even usage between Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, and Brennan Eagles. That's going to be a good game, and I think that's going to go somewhat underlooked from a fantasy perspective because people see LSU and they're like, not messing with that defense, but this is a good offense. Sam Ellinger is not a junk quarterback. He's a guy who can get shit done. Awesome game between Auburn and Oregon. You know, Justin Herbert, he's a guy who's not going to be a college quarterback. Like, that's just it. He's not a guy you play in fantasy. He's a guy that translates better to the NFL than he does at the current level that he's playing at. He looked good. There wasn't anything really bad. He made a really stupid poor throw that got intercepted at the goal line. But other than that, you know, looked better than Bo Nix, who came along as a game went along. I had Seth Williams in my cash game, so I was hating life until that last play, and it actually won me quite a bit of money because apparently nobody could put together a cash game for that night's late. And through the use of guys like Jamar Smith, I was able to, you know, put together a really nice lineup. So Washington over Eastern Washington. Eastern Washington, tougher team than you would expect. Jacob Eason, 4,500 on FanDuel, had him 100% of lineup, so you know that was a good day for me over there. Really let you put whoever you want. Penn State, Iowa dominate. Penn State really dominates to the tune of 79 points. Iowa State barely getting past Northern Iowa, which is not a great look. Again, Northern Iowa, a decent FCS team, maybe even a good FCS team. Speaking of not good, Syracuse, 24 points against Liberty. You expect more. I'm definitely sitting here saying I expected far more out of Syracuse in a game like that. They get a matchup against Maryland this week. We'll see how that goes. Washington State continues their winning ways without needing to have an actual, you know, quarterback that's hyper-talented, and that's not an insult to Anthony Gordon or Gardner Minshew or any of the host of Mike Leach-led air raid quarterbacks who just step into the system and produce. And again, junk opponent, but 420 and five touchdowns is a good day. Nebraska not looking great. Did not look great. However, I'm confident that things will turn around for them. I'm willing to give everybody a one-game pass. These guys get Colorado at home this weekend. That should be a high-scoring game. Everybody feels a little underpriced. Chenault does not. He feels priced where he should be based off of what we saw in game one, but that could quickly turn around, and he'll need to be priced at like 10K next week. KJ Costello gets hurt for Stanford. He'll play this week, but it is against Northwestern. This is a tough game to really like understand what is what, because Northwestern, one of the slowest teams because all they want to do is run the football. You're going to see a lot of low scoring games like Northern Illinois, just really low scoring games. I'm fine with passing on them most of the time in fantasy. Boise State, like the surprise win against the Florida State team that I think is going to be one of the best teams to target for fantasy all year. Boise State plays on Friday this week. They didn't price any of their guys nearly correct. Needless to say, you're going to be able to play a lot of Broncos on Friday night and probably have some success. NC State steamrolls East Carolina. I told everyone just stay away from Holton Ahlers this week. He'll have his time. There's no question about it, but you don't play him against a tough defense like NC State. Kentucky with a hard-fought victory over Toledo. Most disappointing game, and this is probably the one that makes my opinion the way it is this Memphis-Ole Miss game, where, yeah, there was some decent fantasy production from Patrick Taylor, you know, Kenny Gainwell. Other than that, everybody sucked. You know, just a crappy game, 15-10, one we thought was surely going to be 65, 70 points. You know, just disappointing. Kylan Hill is a monster. He's going to stay a monster with Tommy Stevens behind him, being able to keep defenses honest because both of these guys could take off. Problem is going to be figuring out which guy is going to be the dominant force. Maryland stomps 79 points on Howard. Josh Jackson looks good in his return to the gridiron. West Virginia did not look good in their return to the gridiron. They'll get a matchup with Missouri, who looked awful. Fun game between North Carolina, South Carolina. Sam Howell wins the game in the fourth quarter. Keep your eye on Javonte Williams. Like, he was a candidate last year until some things kind of went a little bit sideways. I think he's a guy who could do some damage this year. He's probably going to be cheap because he's not at the top of his depth chart. Georgia State beats Tennessee. I just can't. I'm not even going to comment on it. This is gross that that happened. Boston College defeats Virginia Tech. Hey, do you remember when A.J. Dillon was good? Because that's not the guy we've seen anytime recently. And what should have been a smash matchup averages like 3.7 yards a carry, luck boxes into a touchdown. Very uneven performance, not something I was really excited to see out of him. And that's really disappointing because I expected him to have a big, big, big year this year. Wyoming beats Missouri. Like, I'm going to give you a little bit of secret sauce right now. I'm sure we're going to be able to play them a fair amount because they play in the Mountain West, so we'll get them on a lot of late slates. But Sean Chambers was my key to making big money on that slate. Nobody played him for no reason whatsoever. Missouri's a junk defense. And I mean, you know, they gave up 200 yard rushers. Let's just put that into perspective. Both quarterback and Xavier Valade ran for over 100 yards against this Missouri team. To me, Chambers at his price was the clear value play on the slate. So he won me a lot of money. Very thankful to him. Kelly Bryant looked, you know, pretty pathetic, but still managed 423-2 because sometimes it doesn't matter if you're actually good. All you need to do is be in the right places at the right time. He'll get a matchup against West Virginia this week that, after seeing them play James Madison, makes me feel like it could be okay to go back to the well there. The receiving situation is really tough. They've got probably five guys who are going to rotate being the top dog each week. And shame on you if you didn't play Jonathan Nance last week at 3,300. JT Daniels lost for the year. That's wildly disappointing. This USC team, I don't know how that's going to turn out. Air raid system, I think they'll be fine. I do. Charles Williams from UNLV, 15 for 143 and three touchdowns. Granted, obviously, was against a really crappy Southern Utah team, so can't really, you know, read too much into it. Maybe the best fantasy performance ever, Jalen Hurts. Wow. Can we call him the GOAT? 332 through the air and three touchdowns, 176 on the ground for three. Like, come on, that's nuts. I mean, and I think what a lot of people fail to consider is that you have a quarterback who is a winner. Believe he was on the national championship winning Alabama team. He led them to the championship. Yeah, Derrick Henry was there. But for the first time, Lincoln Riley has a known winner step in. How do you expect anything less? I really believe that it's going to be a situation where Hurts is, and I made this prediction last year where Preston Williams was going to be the most expensive receiver on any fantasy slate by the end of the year, and typically he was. He was like a $9,800 receiver. He and Jerry Jeudy and Tylan Wallace kind of fought for that at the end of the year. Hurts is likely to end up being the highest priced quarterback from probably like week three on, maybe even week two. And Notre Dame destroys Louisville, and it's sad because I really liked what I saw out of Juwan Pass to start the game. It looked like a more even-keeled player, and then the turnovers. Just start two fumbles, you know, second and third quarter. All right, just didn't look like he was making very smart decisions, constantly throwing the ball into the ground instead of into the receiver's, hands. Game book didn't look that much more impressive, but he kind of didn't need to. So not a whole lot I'm taking away from that. I guess what I'm taking away from the whole first week is just the fact that it's week one. You can do all that you want to do in practice, and you know, typically a lot of these practices the week before, you're not even tackling because you don't want anybody to get hurt. And there's some kind of a mental effect with that going into a football game, right? Like, you haven't been hitting people. You haven't been tackling. So, you know, mistakes are bound to be made. I think that a lot of teams are going to tighten things up in week two. I think from a fantasy perspective, there's going to be some edges to gain ownership-wise for potentially some guys like Adrian Martinez, who was in a cupcake matchup and just looked awful. And here we have a guy who many people were talking about coming into the year being a top three, maybe even as high as the number one fantasy quarterback. And after week one, the fantasy sites are pricing him as if he's just some guy. And I get it, because there's really no body of evidence, but it's in a sport where there's no such thing as body of evidence, because most players aren't there for more than 2 years, or relevant for 2 years is the better term. I'm going back to that well. I mean, I built a lineup already. It's very rare that on Monday I build a lineup and I'm like, this is pretty much where I'm going. And I was absolutely fine with every decision I made. It's going to be interesting. I know they just released the night slate. And again, the night slate looks just horrible. Just looks like a very, very, very bad slate of football. I mean, I hate to say it. It looks just so very bad. So I think we should get a bigger late night slate, because there's somewhere between 5 and 7 games that start after 10 p.m. That's the kind of slate I love. We should still get decent tournaments for it, probably $2,000 to winner for the $10 buy-in. I'm fine with that, given that, you know, most people are going to be tucked away in their jammy jams getting ready for NFL week one. I'm going to be here hustling. Let me know. Hit me up at Nick from CWE on Twitter. What kind of stuff do you want to hear? Do you want to see some video? I did video a lot when I was running Research Fantasy. I don't have a great camera, and I'm not really interested right now in buying a high-end one to really do some badass type of recording. But, I mean, you know, whatever kind of content you'd want to see, I'd absolutely be game at producing. So that's going to wrap it up for now. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll probably break down the Friday slate. Maybe the Saturday slate, depending where I'm at. It's a little bit tougher this week because there's no Thursday slate to couple with the Friday slate to let me double up like that. But I'll at least do the Friday slate. I might do part of the Saturday slate just because I might just break the main slate in half and force you to listen to two different podcasts to get my sponsorship revenue up. Because I'm all about that action, boss. All right, until then, thanks for listening. You can check me out at studentbodyright.com. Check us out on Twitter, @thestudentbodyright. I'm not really checking Facebook, so no point going there. We'll talk to you tomorrow.